I'm Hebraic Roots teacher Eddie Chumney, and we are going to be doing part two of our series, Torah and New Testament. And in this session, we're going to be looking at what the New Testament teaches regarding food as it relates to the Torah. And actually what we're really going to be doing is covering the misunderstanding that many believers in Yeshua have regarding the New Testament as it relates to food, where they're thinking that certain verses in the New Testament is telling you that you can eat anything you want. And so really, the in these verses, the New Testament isn't giving you doctrine regarding food. It's our misunderstanding of what the scriptures are saying. So we're going to explain the misunderstandings so we can understand it in its correct context. Begin with, we need to understand that the Torah teaches us that there are clean and unclean beasts. In Genesis chapter 7 verses 1 and 2 it is written, "And the Lord said to Noah, come you and all your house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. Of every clean beast ye shall take to you by sevens, the male and his female, and the beasts that are not clean by two." So we see here in Noah's day that the God of Israel had already communicated that there were clean and unclean beasts. We can see this as well in Leviticus chapter 11, verses 46 and 47, as it is written, "This is the Torah of the beasts, in that we are to make a difference between the unclean and the clean, between the beast that may be eaten and the beast that may not be eaten." Biblical food is what the Torah permits to be eaten. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 6. "And every beast that parts the hoof and cleaves the cleft into two claws and chews the cud among the beasts, that you shall eat." In Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 9 it is written, "These you shall eat of all that are in the waters, all that have fins and scales shall you eat." Then regarding birds in Deuteronomy chapter 14:11, "Of all clean birds you shall eat." It is forbidden by the Torah to eat unclean things. Deuteronomy chapter 14 verse 3, "You shall not eat any abominable thing." Leviticus chapter 11, verse 7, "And the swine, or the pig, though he divide the hoof and be cloven-footed, yet he chews not the cud, he is unclean to you." Leviticus chapter 11, verses 41 and 42, "And every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth shall be an abomination, it shall not be eaten. Whosoever goes upon the belly, and whatsoever goes upon all four, or whatsoever has more feet among all creeping things that creep upon the earth, them ye shall not eat, for they are an abomination." In other words, we're not to eat snake. Leviticus chapter 11, verses 13 and 14. "And these are they which ye shall have in abomination among the fowls, and among the fowls that are unclean is the vulture." The Torah commands us to make a difference between the clean and the unclean. And this is the duty of the priest, to teach the difference between clean and unclean. Leviticus chapter 20, verse 25, "Ye shall therefore put difference between clean beasts and unclean, and between unclean fowls and clean. And you shall not make your souls abominable by beast or by fowl or by any manner of living thing that creeps on the ground, which I have separated from you as unclean." In Ezekiel chapter 22, verse 26, it is written, her priests have violated my Torah. So how is it specified that the priests of old violated the Torah? This is what they were guilty of. They did not put a difference between the holy and the profane. Neither have they shown the difference between the unclean and the clean. Ezekiel chapter 44, verse 15 and verse 23, we can see that the priests of the God of Israel are to teach his people the difference between clean and unclean. But the priests, the Levites, the sons of Zadok, they shall come near to minister unto me, and they will teach my people the difference between the holy and the profane, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean. Now, when you don't discern between the unclean and the clean, you are mixing unclean and clean. And so what is that mixing called? That's called Babylon. Babylon is to confuse by mixing. What do you mix? You mix good and bad. You mix clean and unclean. So the God of Israel wants us to recognize the difference between that which is holy, that which is light, that which is good, versus that which is bad, that which is unholy, that which is unclean. And this is something we are to discern as we live our lives. And in order for us to be conscious of it, he makes us aware of it regarding something that we do every day, which is eat. And he tells us that when you're eating every day, recognize there are things that he regards as clean versus unclean. Things that are good for our body, things that are not good for our body. And so, since we usually eat three times a day, we constantly have it in our mindset that there's clean and unclean. And so, that mindset is supposed to be with us, not just about what we eat, but to realize that spiritually, we're to keep our lives clean versus keeping our lives unclean. So, in Matthew chapter 15, verse 11, Yeshua said these words, "Not that which goes into the mouth defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man." So that verse, in and of and by itself, one could think that Yeshua is saying that I can eat anything I want because it's not that which... because it's not that which goes into the mouth that defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. But in order to understand what he's saying, we got to understand what he's saying in context. And the reason why we make him to think that he's saying that we can eat anything we want is because we take the verse and we isolate it and we take it out of its context. So let's look at it in its context and see what he's teaching on and what he's trying to say. Well, in Matthew chapter 5, in what's commonly called the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes, in verse 17, Yeshua said, "Do not even think the thought that I've come to destroy the Torah or the prophets. I've not come to destroy, but to fulfill." In the book, Understanding the Difficult Words of Jesus by David Bibin and Richard and Roy Blizzard Jr. on page 154, they explain that verse doesn't make sense if you're looking at it through Greek thought or Greek eyes. The only solution, it says, is to put the Greek words back into a Hebraic context. And once we set this passage in its Hebraic context, then it makes sense. It goes on to say, quoting from the book, Understanding the Difficult Words of Jesus, "Undoubtedly, in trying to understand this passage, everything hinges on the meaning of the words destroy and fulfill in verse 17. What does Jesus mean by destroy the law and fulfill the law? Destroy and fulfill are technical terms used in rabbinic argumentation. When a rabbi felt that a colleague had misinterpreted a passage of Scripture, he would say, you are destroying the law. Needless to say, in most cases, his colleagues strongly disagreed. What was destroying the law or giving the incorrect interpretation for one rabbi was fulfilling the law or giving the correct interpretation for another. What we see in Matthew chapter 5, verse 17 and following is a rabbinic discussion. Someone has accused Jesus of destroying the law or incorrectly interpreting it. Of course, neither Jesus nor his accuser would ever think of literally misinterpreting the law. Furthermore, it would never enter the accuser's mind to charge Jesus with the intent to abolish part or all of the Mosaic law. What is being called into question in Jesus' system of interpretation is the way that he interprets the Scripture. So, first of all, when we're looking at Matthew chapter 15, verse 11, we need to see that Yeshua said, I'm not coming to do away with the Torah. I'm coming to give you the correct interpretation. So we just covered what the Torah says about food, that there's clean and unclean food. So by Yeshua's own words here in Matthew chapter 5, verse 17, he's not coming to do away with that. He's coming to give you the correct interpretation and understanding of the Torah. Now, remember, there are four main levels to understanding biblical text or the Torah. And these four levels are the Peshat, that is the simple or the literal level. The next level is called Remez. It's a hint, or you're making an allusion to another scripture. And the third is Darash. Darash means to draw out. And we have the word Midrash, means from the Darash. It means you're drawing out the understanding of the text. And then we have the Sod, which is the spiritual or the mystical understanding. Now, in the Hebrew language, if we take the first letter of these four levels, that is the P in Peshat, the R in Remez, the D in Darash, and the S in Sod, we have a Hebrew word, and that word is Pardes. And Pardes in Hebrew means an orchard or a garden. And what it reminds you of is the Garden of Eden. That in order to interpret and understand the Scripture at the level of the Garden of Eden, or Paradise, you must understand the Scripture at its four levels at the same time. That only looking at it and seeing it from one of the four levels will give you a skewed understanding of the text. Now, in the book, From Exile to Redemption, Volume 1, page 158, by Rabbi Menachem Schneerson, he explains that the Sod is the mystical dimension of the Torah, and that the coming of the Messiah is the revelation of the innermost mystical dimension of the Torah. So when Messiah comes, he's going to reveal the Torah at the Sod level. You must understand that concept, because Yeshua is going to be teaching now Matthew chapter 15, verse 11, at the Sod level. The Sod level is the true intent and true meaning, which is the heart meaning, and the heart is the inner meaning of the text. So now, Yeshua is going to be teaching clean and unclean at the Sod level when we're reading Matthew chapter 15, verse 11. Not that which goes into the mouth defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. So in Job chapter 14, verse 4, it is written, who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? Not one. If something's unclean, how can you bring something clean out of something that's unclean? You can't. If it's unclean, it's unclean. So, after Yeshua said in Matthew chapter 15:11 Not that which goes into the mouth defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. He then says in verse 18, but those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man. So he's not teaching about food. He's teaching about those things that proceed out of the heart. And those things that pertain, that come forth from the heart, they end up influencing the mind and the behavior and the actions of an individual. Now, go forward. At the beginning of Matthew chapter 15, in verses 1 and 2, it says, then came Yeshua, scribes and Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem, saying, why do the disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? And the tradition of the elders is the oral law. For they wash not their hands when they eat. So, Matthew chapter 15, verse 11 is in the context of a question that the disciples asked Yeshua regarding the accusation of the Pharisees of Yeshua's disciples that they didn't wash their hands before they eat. So the context in the subject of Matthew 15, 11 is Yeshua is giving a response regarding following the oral law. That's the subject. Now, in order to understand how this is the context of things and where the Pharisees are coming from, you need to understand who the Pharisees are. So from the Wikipedia Encyclopedia, it explains that the first century Pharisees became what's called today Rabbinic Judaism, Orthodox Judaism, or sometimes it's shortened to say Judaism. The Pharisees, from the Hebrew parashim, from parash, meaning to separate, were, depending on the time, a political party, a social movement, and a school of thought among Jews that flourished during the Second Temple era, which is roughly 536 B.C. to 70 C.E. or A.D. After the destruction of the Second Temple, Pharisaic Judaism came to be known as Rabbinic Judaism, and then simply as Judaism. The Pharisees were an ancient sect of Judaism. They existed during the time of Rabbis Hillel the Elder and Shammai, and during the time of Jesus. They are the direct predecessor to what eventually became known as Rabbinic Judaism. In contrast to other Jewish groups of the time, such as the Sadducees, the Pharisees held that the books of the Tanakh, which they regard as the Hebrew Bible or the written Torah, have always been transmitted in parallel with an oral tradition. They pointed as proof to the text of the Torah itself, where they said many words were left undefined and many procedures mentioned without explanation or instruction. The reader is assumed to be familiar with the details from other sources. This parallel set of material was originally transmitted orally and came to be known as the Oral Law. By the year 200, much of this material was edited together into the Mishnah, the core document of Rabbinic Judaism. So, the Torah of the Pharisees, which you would say the Torah of the rabbis, is they put their interpretation of the text, called the Oral Law, above the actual written text itself. They put the oral law above the written law. In the Torah Anthology, volume 17, page 32, in Rabbinic Judaism, washing your hands is required. Ritual washing of both hands before a meal containing bread is mandatory, even if one's hands are clean, if they're immaculate. And Luke chapter 11, verses 37 and 38. We have an account here where Yeshua is having a meal with a Pharisee. And it is written, as Yeshua spake, a certain Pharisee besought him to dine with him, and he went in and he sat down to eat. And when the Pharisee saw it, he marveled that Yeshua had not first washed before dinner. Why did he marvel? Because he assumed that Yeshua is the same Torah observant Jew that he is. And his understanding of following the Torah is you must wash your hands before you eat. So he's having a meal, this Pharisee is, with Yeshua, who he thinks that Yeshua is Torah observant like him, so he just assumes he's got to wash his hands, but he doesn't. So he marvels that he doesn't wash his hands. And so it is from this event that Yeshua took the opportunity to teach the sewed meaning of clean and unclean, which is, the Lord said unto him, now do you Pharisees make clean the outside of the cup, that is the external, that is the literal, that is the pashat, which is something you see, which is washing the hands. But the inward part, that is the heart, is full of ravening and wickedness. In other words, he's saying, if you wash your hands so that your hands are clean before you eat, but you have an evil heart, what good is it to wash your hands if your heart isn't right? You're not really fulfilling the Torah or the heart of the Torah unless you get your heart in right order. It's not in and of what you do on the outside. It's all about having a right heart and a right heart relationship, of which the outside, the Peshat, is to teach you. Back to Matthew chapter 15, verses 1 and 2. Does the Torah, that is the written Torah, require that you wash your hands before you eat? The answer is no. Then came to Yeshua scribes and Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem, saying, why do the disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? Why do they violate the oral law? Because they don't wash their hands when they eat, according to the Pharisees' perspective, according to Rabbinic Judaism, called Orthodox Judaism, and sometimes shortened to say Judaism. So Yeshua in Matthew 15 is answering this question about whether you are to follow the oral Torah or not. And so in verse 3, Yeshua answered and said, why do you transgress the commandment of God? That is what's written. By your tradition, the oral law. So he's saying that by the interpretation of the written, they're violating the letter of the written law or even the heart or the intent of the written Torah. And then he says in verse 9, in vain they do worship me. Now look what Yeshua is saying, that which the Pharisees are doing is worship of him, even though they don't acknowledge that it's worship of him. Now, how would it be worship of him? Because who the Pharisees are worshiping is Yahweh Elohim. And if Yeshua is Yahweh Elohim, then they're trying to worship Yahweh Elohim, then really, they're really trying to worship Yeshua, although in their logical minds, they're not doing it. So that's why he says, in vain they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. He's referring to the oral law. So that's the context. He's doing a teaching on, do you follow the oral law? Why don't the disciples of Yeshua follow the oral law? And he's answering that question. And in answering that question, he says to them in Matthew chapter 15, verse 10, he called the multitude and said, hear and understand. Not that which goes into the mouth defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. Then answered Peter and said to him, declare unto us this parable. So you get that? Peter understood that when Yeshua said, not that which goes into the mouth defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth defiles a man, Peter understood that to be a parable. He understood that Yeshua wasn't being literally saying that you could eat anything you want. He's explaining to them whether the Pharisees' objection to how the disciples are following the Torah, that they're not doing it like the Pharisees, they're not following the oral law, And so Yeshua is giving an answer that in vain they're worshiping him, teaching for doctrine the commandments of men. Then he says, it is not which goes into the mouth that defiles a man. Well, go back, let me quote it correctly in verse 11. Not that which goes into the mouth defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. And Peter understood that it was a parable. In other words, it was a deeper level of Torah instruction. So now Yeshua is going to explain to Peter the meaning of what he said, and that it was a teaching of the Torah through a deep or a dark saying, a parable. Now, in the Art Scroll of Genesis, in the introduction on page 41, this is an Orthodox Jewish published work, they explain, or they believe, that the oral law was taught in its entirety to Moses during his 40 days and 40 nights in heaven. The basis of their belief system is they believe that the oral law was taught in addition to what we have recorded and written down to Moses. Now, according to Yeshua, this is an error. That what they say is the oral law was not taught to Moses. But the Pharisees believe that it was. And their belief is affirmed in the Sanchino Midrash Rabbah, volume 6, page 736. It says they were all given to Moses on Sinai, and they contain statutes and ordinances, the Torah, the Mishnah, the Talmud, and Haggadah. And then in the Sanchino Midrash Rabbah, volume 6, page 613, they explain that the Orthodox Jews believe that the Mishnah, which is the oral law, is greater or supersedes written scripture. With that in mind, now let's look at Matthew chapter 15, verse 11 in context. Once again, what Yeshua is addressing or answering is, why do the disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? Why are they not following Pharisaic oral law in its entirety? For they wash not their hands when they eat. So Yeshua goes on to explain that in vain they, that is the Pharisees who follow the oral law, it's in vain that they're worshiping him, teaching for doctrine that this is the way you need to follow the Torah, which means that they're destroying the Torah, according to Yeshua, the commandments of men, which they're saying is the oral law. So Yeshua said, not that which goes in the mouth defiles a man, but to eat with unwashed hands. Now, if you're eating with unwashed hands, you would not be following the oral law. So Yeshua says, if you don't follow the oral law in its entirety, that if you don't follow the oral law, which you wouldn't be following it if you eat with unwashed hands, that is not defiling you. You are not unclean, Yeshua is teaching, because you don't follow oral law. So, what law is Yeshua teaching that his disciples are to follow? He's the lawgiver, James chapter 4, verse 12. You're supposed to follow the Torah that he gave, his instruction of how you follow that Torah, and Yeshua gave us the Holy Spirit to help us and lead us and guide us in how to do it. And that's how we're supposed to follow the Torah. So let's summarize what we've covered so far in this teaching. Number one, the Torah tells us what may be eaten, what is clean, and what may not be eaten, what is unclean. The Torah defines food as that which may be eaten. And that which may be eaten, according to Torah, is clean. Yeshua taught the Torah at the sod level, that is the spiritual, the mystical, the inner meaning, the heart meaning of the Torah. When teaching the Torah at the sod level, Yeshua instructs his disciples that they are to follow his Torah rather than the oral Torah of the Pharisees. Yeshua taught his disciples in Matthew 15 that if you follow the oral Torah, which is washing your hands, which causes your hands to be clean, but you have an evil heart, then you're still unclean to the God of Israel if your heart is unclean, even though you physically wash your hands. Yeshua did not teach his disciples that they can eat anything they want. He was teaching them the sod level of the Torah, the heart meaning of what it means in the eyes of the God of Israel to be clean and unclean. When Yeshua ate with a Pharisee who followed the oral law in Luke 11, he did not wash his hands before he ate, thus violating the oral Torah, but he didn't violate the written Torah or the heart of the Torah. And so this is the context of understanding the verse in Matthew chapter 15, verse 11, that if you just take the verse and isolate it, it would seem that it's saying that you can eat anything you want, and it's what make you unclean. And that is what traditional Christianity has done. But they've taken the text out of context, ignoring not only the context of the chapter, but ignoring what the Torah itself tells you about the subject. And so Yeshua was explaining that the God of Israel is concerned with your heart, that you have a right heart attitude and right heart conduct toward him. That does not negate clean and unclean and what you may and may not eat. So Yeshua says that he didn't come to destroy the Torah. In other words, there is still clean and unclean regarding food. But while you're following clean and unclean as it relates to food, you're to make sure, above all things, that your heart is right with him. Now, let's go on to Acts chapter 10. And it's often quoted or referred to among traditional Christianity. They refer to Acts chapter 10 as another proof that you can eat anything you want. But is that really what Acts chapter 10 is about, if we understand it in context from a Torah perspective? So we're going to look at Acts chapter 10. Now it says in Acts chapter 10 verses 9 and 10, on the morrow as they went on their journey and drew nigh into the city, Peter went up upon the housetop to pray about the sixth hour, and he became very hungry, and he would have eaten. But while they made ready, he fell into a trance, wherein what he saw, he's having a vision, or he's having a night vision, and where he saw was all manner of four-footed beasts of the earth, and wild beasts, and creeping things, and fowls of the air. In Acts chapter 10, verse 13, there came a voice to him, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." And Peter replied, "Not so, Lord, for I've never eaten anything that is common or unclean." So first of all, who is the one in Matthew 15 that said, "Declare unto us this parable"? It was Peter. So after that event, Peter didn't eat anything that was unclean according to Torah. because this event takes place after Yeshua was resurrected. So obviously he did not think or believe that what Yeshua was teaching, that it permitted him to eat anything that he wanted, because here after Yeshua is resurrected, he still says, I've not eaten anything that is unclean. And then in Acts chapter 10, 15 and 16, the voice spake unto him the second time, what God has cleansed, call not common. This was done three times. And the vessel was received up again into heaven. No, I'm fine. Now, one of the things we need to understand is that there's a principle in the Torah that when Yahweh gives us a night dream or a night vision that is from Him, understand the way in which He does it. It comes from Numbers chapter 12, verse 6 and verse 8. He said, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision and will speak unto him in a dream. And then it says how he's going to do it. In dark speeches. And dark speeches is the Hebrew word hidah. And it means a riddle or a parable. That when the God of Israel gives you a dream or a vision, it is going to be in the form of a parable or a riddle that has to be interpreted. And so, when Peter is being given this vision, these unclean things that he's seeing is not meant to be literal. Because what he's being given, according to Torah, is a riddle. It's a parable. It has a deeper meaning. Now, looking at the event here in Acts chapter 10 in context, it says, Acts chapter 10 verses 1 and 2, there was a certain man in Caesarea called Cornelius, a centurion of the band called the Italian band. He was a devout man, and the text says that Cornelius is one that feared God. Well, if he was a God-fearer, by biblical definition, what did he believe? In Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 19, it says, that he may learn to fear Yahweh his Elohim. What is fearing Yahweh his Elohim? To keep all the words of this Torah and these statutes and do them. So when it says Cornelius is one that feared God, it means that he followed the Torah. Now, to Judaism, Cornelius is regarded as what they call a proselyte, or perhaps a half-proselyte. And in the book, The Messianic Idea in Israel by Joseph Klausner on page 479, it is explained that in the Tanaitic period, there was a large group of semi-proselytes or half-proselytes. These persons were called variously devout ones, fearers, God-fearers, and worshippers of God, and the like. They are mentioned a number of times in the Acts of the Apostles and the works of Josephus. So these God-fearers appropriated only the loftier ideas of Pharisaic Judaism, such as monotheism and the ethics of the fathers. Most of them kept the biblical Sabbath, and they refrained from eating swine's flesh, but they did not observe the numerous ritual rules of Pharisaic Judaism. So what would you call this person today? You would call it a Hebrew roots person, that you believe in following the Torah, but we don't follow the numerous ritual rules of Rabbinic Judaism, being a non-Jew. So, that is who Cornelius is, a Hebrew roots person. And so in Acts chapter 10, verse 3 and verses 5 and 6, it says, he saw in a vision, evidently about the ninth hour of the day, an angel of God coming into him and saying unto him, Cornelius, and now send men to Joppa and call for one Simon, whose surname is Peter. He lodges with one Simon, a tanner, whose house is by the seaside. He will tell you what you ought to do. So Cornelius sends three people to Joppa to see Peter. Acts chapter 10, verses 7 and 8. And when the angel which spake unto Cornelius was departed, he called two of his servants and a devout soldier of them that waited on him continually. And when he had declared all these things unto them, he sent them to Joppa. So this is what Cornelius is being instructed by the God of Israel to do. Meanwhile, the God of Israel is speaking to Peter. Acts chapter 10, verses 9 and 10. On the morrow, as they went on their journey and drew nigh to the city, Peter went up upon the housetop to pray, being the sixth hour. And he became very hungry, and he would have eaten, but while they made ready, he fell into a trance. And he saw heaven opened, and a certain vessel descending unto him, as it had been a great sheet knit at the four corners, let down to the earth. Now what is he seeing in his vision? He's seeing what we call a tallit, a great sheet knit at the corners. He's seeing a tallit. Now what is the purpose of what's at the corners of the tallit? What's at the corners is called in Hebrew tzitzit. And we're told the purpose of tzitzit in Numbers, in chapter 15, beginning in verse 37 and 38, it says, And Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and bid them that they make them fringes in the borders of their garments throughout their generations, that they put upon the fringe of the borders a ribbon of blue. And it shall be unto you for a fringe, that you may look upon it and remember all the commandments of Yahweh and do them, that you seek not after your own heart and your own eyes after which you used to go whoring, that you remember to do all my commandments and be holy unto your God. So the purpose of wearing tzitzit is to cause you in the natural to do something in the natural, that is the literal, that is the pashat, to remind you to keep in your heart the commandments of Yahweh your Elohim. Now, the woman with the issue of blood in Mark chapter 5, when the text says that she grabbed a hold of the corner of the garment of Yeshua, she was grabbing a hold of his tzitzit, which symbolically means she was grabbing hold to his commandments. Mark chapter 5, beginning in verse 25 through 27, it is written, And a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years, she suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing better, but rather grew worse. When she heard of Yeshua, she came in the press behind, and touched his garment. For she said, If I may touch his clothes, I will be whole. Symbolically, she's stretching out not only to believe in Yeshua, but to follow his Torah. And straightway, the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. Now, this is what Peter is seeing in his vision. He's seeing a tallit, that on the corner of the tallit is tzitzit. Now, in a traditional Jewish wedding, a tallit is put over the huppah. And so, the tallit, and being under the tallit, can represent the coming together in unity regarding something. And that's what this is going to ultimately be meaning. That's the parable of the seeing the tallit and the tzitzit on the tallit. Now in Acts chapter 10 verse 12, goes on to say what Peter saw in his vision, wherein were all manner of four-footed beasts of the earth and wild beasts and creeping things and fowls of the air. Now, in order to understand what this is going to represent, we're going to go back and give you a foundation or a background of the Northern Kingdom, who they are, and what was prophesied regarding them. And that's going to help us to get the interpretation of what's being communicated in Peter's vision. Now, the Northern Kingdom was originally taken captive by the Assyrians in 2 Kings chapter 15, verse 29. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, came Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, and he took various cities, and among them he took the Galilee, which is the land of Naphtali, and he carried them captive to Assyria. The book of Hosea is written as a judgment of the Northern Kingdom, and ultimately it prophesies of their restoration. Now, the Northern Kingdom had committed whoredom, and this was represented in the marriage between Gomer and Hosea. And there are three children that are mentioned that are born as a result of this marriage in Hosea chapter 1. And the names of these children are prophetic of the judgment upon the Northern Kingdom. So in Hosea chapter 1, verses 2 and 3, we're told that Hosea is married to Gomer, and their marriage personifies or represents the whoredom of the Northern Kingdom as it relates to their relationship to the God of Israel. Now, in Hosea chapter 1, verse 4, it tells us the name of the first child. The name of the child is Jezreel. Jezreel means God will sow or God will scatter, that the judgment of the Northern Kingdom was to be sown into the nations or scattered among the nations. Then the name of the second child in Hosea chapter 1 verse 6 is Lo Ruhamah. Lo in Hebrew is not, Ruhamah is mercy. So the second child is named No Mercy. Then the third child in Hosea chapter 1 verse 9 is Lo Ami. Lo in Hebrew is not, Ami is my people. So the third child is named Not My People. So, after strong rebuke and condemnation of the Northern Kingdom for their whoredom, that the God of Israel is going to scatter them in the nations of the world, he's not going to show them mercy, and they're not going to be his people, then he offers words of comfort or restoration in Hosea chapter 1, verse 10, where he says, yet, even though no mercy, not my people, yet, the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered, and that is a reference back to the covenant promise that was made to Abraham, that through this judgment upon the Northern Kingdom, that the God of Israel is going to fulfill his covenant promise to Abraham. And it says that it will come to pass that in the place where it was said, you are not my people, there will be said unto them, you are the sons of the living God. So a son of the living God, according to James chapter 1, verse 12, thank you, according to John chapter 1 verse 12, is a believer in Yeshua as the Messiah. So in John chapter 1 verse 12, it says, as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God. So the prophecy in Hosea chapter 1 is that the Northern Kingdom would become believers in Yeshua as the Messiah. Now, in their whoredom, they're likened as being a people that are unclean, who follows after idolatry. They're likened to being unclean in departing from the Torah in their whoredom. So let's see how the nation of Israel in their idolatry, in their whoredom, is likened to being unclean and unclean beasts and animals. Ezekiel, in chapter 8, verse 6 and verses 9 and 10, we see where Israel's abominations are associated with creeping things and abominable things. He said furthermore unto me, Son of man, see thou what they do, even the great abominations that the house of Israel commits here, that I should go far off from my sanctuary? But turn you yet again, and you will see greater abominations. And he said, go and behold the wicked abominations that they do there. So in describing the wicked abominations, it says in Ezekiel chapter 8, verse 10, So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beasts and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed on the wall. So the abominations is portrayed on the wall as being and associated with unclean things. Now, specifically the northern kingdom or Ephraim, in their judgment of being assimilated and scattered in the nations of the world, it was said of them that they would eat unclean things. Hosea chapter 9, verse 3, they shall not dwell in the Lord's land, but Ephraim will return to Egypt, and they shall eat unclean things in Assyria. Now, I gave you all that background so you can understand this principle right here. And this is huge in understanding what Peter is being shown and the meaning of what he's being shown. And the principle is this. You become what you set your eyes upon and what you dwell upon and what you desire. You become what you idolize. And so in Psalm 115, verse 4 and verse 8, it says, their idols are silver and gold, the work of man's hands. They that make idols, are like unto them. And so the principle is, you become what you idolize. So, the northern kingdom wanted to be like the nations of the world. And the nations of the world don't follow Torah. And by not following Torah, they're unclean. They wanted to be like the nations of the world. In other words, they wanted to be unclean. So therefore, the God of Israel saw them as being unclean and breaking the covenant. They became what they idolized. So if I'm going to represent the northern kingdom, I'm going to represent their uncleanness. And the way I demonstrate their uncleanness is I'm going to show you unclean animals. But it says in Hosea, after he made strong rebuke of the northern kingdom in Hosea chapter 1. He goes on to promise them in Hosea chapter 2 that a covenant is going to be made with them. What's going to be this covenant that's going to be made with them after their judgment? It's the new covenant. It's the new covenant. So in Hosea chapter 2 verse 18 it says, in that day will I make a covenant with them. That is the northern kingdom. And I'm going to make a covenant with the beasts of the field. Well, he's making a covenant with the northern kingdom. And they're likened unto these beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven, the creeping things of the earth. So the northern kingdom is likened unto the beasts of the field, the fowls of the heaven, the creeping things of the earth. And that's who the God of Israel is making a covenant with. The northern kingdom who was unclean. And I will betroth you unto me forever. I will betroth you unto me in righteousness, in judgment, and loving kindness, and in mercies. I will betroth you unto me in faithfulness, and you will know Yahweh. Who's the Yahweh that they're going to know? Yeshua. The northern kingdom's going to know Yeshua. So when Peter is shown in the vision these unclean entities, in the vision he's told the following. Acts chapter 10, verse 13. And there came a voice to him, rise, Peter, kill and eat. The word kill here is the Greek word thuo, which means to sacrifice or to slaughter. And it's the same word that would be used to kill the Passover lamb. So remember, the vision that Peter is being shown is a parable. It's a riddle. Now, in order to understand the meaning of kill and eat, that it's associated with a sacrifice, the corresponding Hebrew word is zabak. And zabak is a sacrifice or a covenant sacrifice, or it's also seen as being and used for the purpose of a thank offering. And we see the word zabak being used, and the word being used with Jacob having a covenant meal. The word is going to be associated with having a covenant meal in Genesis 31, verse 54. Then Jacob offered sacrifice. The Hebrew word is zabak. he offered sacrifice upon the mount and called his brethren to eat bread. And they did eat bread, and they tarried all night in the mount. So, in Acts chapter 10, verse 13, when Peter's told to kill and eat, the Hebrew word that would correspond to that in association is sabach. And sabach is used and can be used as a covenant meal. That's the background of what ultimately the meaning of what Peter is being shown and the meaning of what he's being shown. Now in Leviticus chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, if his oblation be a sacrifice, the word oblation is the Hebrew word korban. It's the Strong's number 7133. So if your korban, and a korban is an offering that means to come near or approach the God of Israel. That if you're going to come near and approach the God of Israel, if your korban be a sabach, if your korban is a zabach, if your offering is a covenant meal that you're going to draw near to him, it's going to be in the form of killing or slaying an animal, and it's going to be a covenant meal in the form of a thank offering or a peace offering. So what are you coming near to God to do? To make reconciliation. The purpose of coming near is to make reconciliation. So in Acts chapter 10, verse 13, it says, there came a voice to him, rise, Peter, kill and eat. Now going back to Leviticus chapter 3, verse 1, finishing the verse, or going further into the verse, it says, if your korban, if you're drawing near, is a zabach, is an offering that is a shalem, a peace offering. So we see the word zabach is used to draw near in a covenant meal to make reconciliation. So that is going to be the meaning behind kill and eat. It means the killing is for the purpose of an offering to draw near and to reconcile. In Leviticus chapter 3, in verse 1, it says, if your korban be a zabach of shalem, a peace offering, this is what you will do. You will lay your hand upon the head of his offering, and you're to kill it. And he will offer the sacrifice of the shalem, the peace offering, an offering made by fire unto Yahweh. Back to Acts chapter 10, Peter said, now Peter saw the vision, now realizing that the vision is a parable, it's a riddle. Well, when you originally see something, you think of it literally. So when Peter saw the vision, he saw it literally, and he says, when he said eat, and it's unclean, Yahweh is communicating in a riddle, in a parable, but Peter's seeing it as a pashat, as literal. So when he says, rise and eat, he says, no, I've never eaten anything that is common or unclean. And then the voice that spake unto him said, what God has cleansed, don't call common. And this was done 3 times. And the vessel was received up again unto heaven. Acts chapter 10, verse 17. While Peter doubted himself what the vision which he had seen would mean, why is he doubting? First of all, in the literal, it doesn't make sense. He's being told to violate the Torah in the literal. And he knows that that's not the meaning of it. So if that's not the meaning of it, what does this mean? Because Yahweh is giving him a vision which is a parable or a riddle. So if it's a parable or a riddle, you're not going to understand it right away. So he's doubting what it means. And while he thought on the vision of what it might mean, the Spirit said to him, behold, 3 men seek you. Arise, therefore, get you down, and go with them, doubting nothing. So, he's not supposed to doubt, and what he's not supposed to doubt is these 3 men, that he's going to go with them. He's not to See, Peter was doubting about the vision, and Yahweh says, and the Spirit says, no, you're not to doubt about the three men. So the riddle, the three times, is referring to the three men. So now we have Acts chapter 10, verse 21. Peter went down to the men which were sent of him from Cornelius and said, Behold, I am he whom you seek. What is the cause where you are come? And he said to them, and now Peter is meeting non-Jews. And Peter is saying to them, You know that it's unlawful, it's a violation of Torah, for a man that is a Jew to keep company or to have fellowship with one of another nation, one that's not of the nation of Israel or one that is not Jewish. But he said that it's an unlawful thing. Is it stated that way in the written Torah? No. It is a violation of the oral law for a Jew to keep company with one that's a non-Jew, especially if it's perceived that the non-Jew doesn't follow oral law. So that's what Peter is referring to. In his mind, he's following oral law. Remember, the Torah commands a difference to be made between clean and unclean. Leviticus chapter 20, verse 25. You shall therefore put difference between clean beasts and unclean, and between unclean fowls and clean. You shall not make your souls abominable by beast or by fowl or by any manner of things that creeps on the ground, which I've separated from you as unclean. Now, in Pirkei Avot, which is the sayings of the fathers, chapter 1, verse 1, this is what Rabbinic Judaism or oral law teaches, that you're to make what they call a fence around the Torah. So if the literal commandment is you're not to do something, that they put a fence around it. And so in order to protect you from doing something you're not supposed to do, you put a fence so you can't get near it. And so Moses received the Torah from Sinai, transmitted it to Joshua. Joshua transmitted it to the elders to the prophets, and the prophets transmitted it to the men of the great assembly. And the men of the great assembly said to do three things: be deliberate in judgment, raise many students, and make a protective fence for the Torah. So Rabbinic Judaism says we make a fence around the Torah. What do they call that fence? The oral law. Let's see an example of a rabbinic fence for Jews to not associate with non-Jews. In the Talmud, in Ovadah Zarah 37-43, and this is the weekly daf put out by Rabbi Mendel Weinbach of Or Sameach. That's an Orthodox Jewish organization. Commenting to the Talmud, he says, The conclusion of the Gemara is that the prohibition against food cooked by a non-Jew is of rabbinic origin, either to discourage intimacy in dining with non-Jews, which may lead to eating their non-kosher food, which is what Rashi says, or to discourage the social contact, which may lead to intermarriage. That's the Tosafot. Now, that's the background of what's going through Peter's mind, that he is not to eat with or have fellowship with non-Jews, because the fence around the Torah says you're not to do it. That's why he said it's an unlawful thing, not according to written Torah, but according to oral Torah. Acts chapter 10, verse 28, he said unto them, You know how that it is an unlawful thing for a man that is a Jew to keep company or come into one of another nation, but God has shown me that I should not call any man common or unclean. So God has told him, you're not supposed to call any man common or unclean. That's what the whole parable is about, is that three men was coming to see him, and the God of Israel wanted Peter to have fellowship with them and didn't want Peter to regard them in his mind as being unclean, thus refusing their company. That's what it's all about. So don't call any man common or unclean. In Matthew chapter 4, verse 19, Yeshua said to his disciples, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." Now, man in Hebrew is Adam. And twice in the book of Ezekiel, as mentioned in the Art Scroll of Ezekiel on page 30, in Ezekiel chapter 34, verse 31, and Ezekiel 36, verse 10, that the nation of Israel is called Adam, or man. So don't call any man common or unclean. I could interpret that the God of Israel is telling Peter, don't call a fellow Israelite unclean. Because the house of Judah, or Judaism, sees their brothers of the northern kingdom as being unclean. So, the God of Israel is trying to tell Peter, receive them. I don't regard them as unclean. You don't regard them as unclean. So let's summarize what this vision is about, because the vision is a parable or a riddle that needed to be decoded. Yahweh gave Peter a vision about eating unclean things. According to the Torah, the message of a prophetic vision is given by Yahweh in the form of a parable or a riddle. In Peter's case, this is the spiritual meaning of what he was given. Peter was playing the prophetic role of rabbinic Judaism because he had the mindset about the oral law. And in telling Peter that he wanted to receive the three men, which would include Cornelius, who was a half-proselyte, he believed in following the Torah, but not all of oral Torah. He represented a Hebrew roots person, or today, one who is returning to embrace Torah and believes in Yeshua, might be regarded as an Ephraimite. So, it's a prophetic message that Peter is being given by Yahweh for rabbinic Judaism to accept and to have table fellowship. That's the meaning of kill and eat. To have table fellowship with non-Jewish Ephraimites who believe that Yeshua is the Messiah. And in doing so, this would be a way of drawing near or korban to the God of Israel by presenting unto the God of Israel a peace offering, which is reconciliation or friendship between Ephraim and Judah. In this vision, Yahweh was not instructing Peter to begin eating unclean food. So now we see in both examples which we have looked at in this session, Matthew 15 and Acts 10, it was an issue about oral law. It was not about you can eat anything you want. Now let's look at Acts chapter 15, where there was a ruling about four necessary things for the non-Jews who believe in the God of Israel. In Acts 15, 19 and 20 it says, "Wherefore my sentence is that we trouble not them which from among the Gentiles are turned to God." The word turn, taking it back to the Hebrew, is shuv, which means they're repenting and they're seeking to follow the Torah. So the non-Jew who is seeking to follow the Torah, it is said regarding them that we write to them that they abstain from pollutions of idols, that they abstain from fornication, they abstain from things strangled, and they abstain from eating blood, or abstain from blood. So, among the things that are mentioned is abstaining from things strangled. And things strangled here is the Greek word which means depriving an animal deprived of life without the proper shedding of blood. Now, where is it explained that when you kill an animal, there's a proper way to shed its blood in the Torah? So, before you eat the animal that gets killed, you're supposed to properly shed its blood. And that, so there's an instruction to the non-Jew who believes in Yeshua that you are to, when you eat food, biblical food that you kill, you're to have the animal's blood be shed properly. So that is something associated with eating. Holiness is linked with not eating forbidden food. Leviticus chapter 11, verse 45 and 47. For I am Yahweh that brings you out of the land of Egypt to be your Elohim. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. What is being holy? To make a difference between the unclean and the clean, between the beast that may be eaten and the beast that may not be eaten. So you're being holy before Yahweh when you make a distinction between clean and unclean. Strangers or non-Jews are commanded in the Torah to forsake eating blood. Leviticus 17, verse 11. Whatsoever man there be of the house of Israel or of the strangers that sojourn among you that eats any manner of blood, I will even set my face against that soul that eats blood and will cut him off from among his people. And then it says in Acts 15, verse 21, for Moses of old time has in every city them that preach him being read in the synagogues every Sabbath. So these non-Jews, it is explained, would be learning the Torah each week. So let's summarize here. Acts 15 regarding the non-Jew and food. In Acts 15, non-Jews who believe that Yeshua is the Messiah is to abstain from eating things strangled, which is the improper way of killing an animal that is clean to be eaten. It's the improper way of killing a clean animal to eat, and you are to abstain from eating blood. In Leviticus, the God of Israel instructs both the native-born and the sojourner, that is the non-Jew, to eat clean food, which includes animals which are properly killed, but to not eat blood. So once again, this is our third example, where the non-Jew is to eat clean versus unclean. And finally then, we're going to be finishing up the teaching by looking at 1 and 2 Timothy. And this is Paul writing to Timothy, and we're going to see how it relates and pertains to our and how we've seen this as something communicating about eating food. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 1 and 3 through 5, it says, now the Spirit speaks expressly that in the latter times some will depart from the faith. So it's speaking about departing from the faith, and in departing from the faith, they're going to command to abstain from meat. That's the old English word for food. They're going to command to abstain from food, which God has created to be received with thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth. And that nothing is to be refused if it is to be received with thanksgiving, for it is sanctified by the word of God in prayer. So we're going to look at these verses in context, where it says commanding to abstain from meats which God has created to be received. The word meats is the Greek word broma. It's the Strong's number 1033 in the Greek dictionary, and it means that which is eaten or food. Now in 2 Timothy chapter 3 verse 1 and verse 13, and then going into 2 Timothy chapter 4 verse 4, it says, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times will come, but evil men and seducers." So the last days is associated with evil men. The last days is associated with evil men, and this is what they do. They will turn away their ears. In the last days, evil men will turn away your ear. Well, if you turn away your ear, what are you doing? You're not following the Torah. In Psalm 78, verse 1, it says, "Give ear, O my people, to my Torah. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth." So in the last days, evil men will turn away the ear. They will tell people that they're not supposed to follow the Torah. Now in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 4, it says, "They will turn away their ears from the truth." What is the truth? It is following the Torah. Psalm 119, verse 142. "Your righteousness is an everlasting righteousness, and your Torah is the truth." Psalm 119, verse 151. "You are near, O Yahweh, and all your commandments are truth." Malachi chapter 2, verses 1 and 6. "And now, O you priests, this commandment is for you." The Torah of truth was in his mouth. So in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 4, it says, "And they shall turn away their ears from the truth." That means that in the last days, evil men will tell others to not follow the Torah as a way of expressing their faith in Yeshua as the Messiah. Now, Timothy was taught the Torah from a child. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. In chapter 3, verse 15, Paul to Timothy, "And that from a child you've known the Holy Scriptures." Timothy was taught the Holy Scriptures. What was he taught? The Torah. So we know that Paul is writing to Timothy, who followed the Torah. And he's giving warning to Timothy that in the last days, evil men will cause people to not follow the truth, to not follow the Torah. Departing from the faith by not eating Torah-sanctified foods. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1 and verse 3. "Now the Spirit speaks expressly that in the latter times some will depart from the faith." What is the faith? Believing in Yeshua as the Messiah and following the Torah. So, the subject is departing from believing that Yeshua is the Messiah and following the Torah. And this is what they're going to do by departing from the faith. They're going to command to abstain from meat. Now, what this means in context, you got to read it in context, is those who are departing from the faith, those who are evil and turning people's ears away from the truth, are telling them to abstain from eating only foods which God has commanded to be received with thanksgiving. So what is the foods that God created to be received with thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth? Those who believe and know the truth, those who follow the Torah, what foods was God given and were created to be received and eaten with thanksgiving? Clean foods. So if they're commanding them to abstain from doing that, what they're doing is they're saying you can eat anything you want. And that's departing from the faith. You see how you have to carefully read things in context and know your definitions in order to see what's being said? Otherwise, it gets interpreted as meaning that you can eat anything you want. And it's not what it's saying. So in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 4 and 5, that nothing is to be refused by those who know the truth. Nothing's to be received, to be refused to be eaten by those who know the truth. Well, if you know the truth, what are you doing? You're eating clean foods. That you're not to refuse clean foods, and it's to be received with thanksgiving. For it, that is, those who know the truth and not refusing food that is clean, is sanctified by the word of God in prayer. How is it sanctified? God called it clean. So that which he called clean is sanctified food, and that sanctified food is to be received with thanksgiving and with prayer, thanking God for the food. So let's summarize this. Timothy was taught the Torah in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15, and that those who know the truth, that is, they follow the Torah and know the difference between clean and unclean, are to eat their food with thanksgiving because it is sanctified by being clean. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. That in the last days, evil men will turn others away from following the truth. That means following the Torah. By saying that you can eat anything you want without the restrictions which the Torah teaches. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. So this is our teaching on what the New Testament has to say regarding the traditional Christian perspective of what the New Testament says as it relates and pertains to food. And what we've gone over are those verses, Matthew 15, verse 11, Acts chapter 10, Acts chapter 15, 1 and 2 Timothy, where traditional Christianity, ignoring the Torah, pulls out verses out of context and then makes the claim that the New Testament says you can eat anything you want. And we went back, we've looked at it in context. Context, we need to understand that the issues was following the Torah of Yeshua versus oral law in Matthew chapter 15. Acts chapter 10, Peter's vision, we see looking at from a Torah perspective, the vision is a riddle or a parable that needed to be decoded, that Peter ultimately realized what it meant only when the three men arrived, and that's when he understood what it meant. Acts 15 teaches that the non-Jew is to eat clean food, that the non-Jew is not to eat food that has been improperly killed, that the non-Jew is not to eat blood. And then, finishing up in 1 and 2 Timothy, we looked at it in context where it talks about departing from the faith, and it would be evil men that would tell people to not follow the truth. But those who follow the truth are to receive their food with thanksgiving and prayer, because that food, for those who know the truth, is sanctified. If you know the truth, you're going to be eating clean food. So this is the conclusion of this session on TNT Torah and New Testament Part 2. I pray that the teaching has been a blessing to you. And remember always these words from 1 John chapter 2, verse 6. He who says he abides in him. He who says he's a believer in Yeshua as the Messiah ought himself to walk. That means to live our lives even as he walked. And how did Yeshua walk or live his life? He followed the Torah of his Father. Even so, he instructed believers in him in John chapter 14, verse 15. If you love me, keep my commandments. Keeping the commandments of Yeshua is following the Torah that he gave, because he is the lawgiver, James chapter 4 and verse 12. Shalom in Yeshua the Messiah. Amen.